look, if we have to live in like technocratic dystopia, I at least want to be able to climb into like a metallic technology womb and just be a fetus inside a robot and not have to worry about the world Matrix style.
Whatever happened to the vintage sci-fi dreams, right? Like now it's all like, oh, future dystopia. Oh, the rich live in a special city floating above the earth. Like, oh, techno capital. Like, boo, that fucking sucks. What happened to like unexplainable interactions with aliens? What happened to like, as soon as the most important thing in the movie is about to happen, the special effects would have been too expensive. So the camera cuts away and you have to imagine it. Like, where's that? That's the real thinking man's fiction right there. You know what I'm talking about?
Well, I mean, like, the Air Force they're going to release that UFO info pretty soon, which I'm very much looking forward to.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as that UFO info comes out, I'm just doing a who is search and finding out where they live, right? Like, I'm not skipping out on Gnostic knowledge. I'm going to the front of the line.
Literally just work around, right? Easter egg. Cheat code.
Hey, we finally got contact from the aliens, but it looks like it's going to take about 2 decades of troubleshooting to get the line stable. Do you want to work on this? Like,
that's what bothers me about all this. A lot of like speculation doesn't take into account, is it possible to do superluminal travel? We don't fucking know. And like that, like communication and travel is going to affect basically, I mean, I guess unless the aliens can get a hold of some test chemicals that just completely fuck up their sense of time, that would be a way to get around that.
Yeah, millions of wooks around the country are like, I've already broken the light barrier millions of times, man. It just takes a lot of acid.
Just a lot of DMT.
I've astrally projected to Proxima Centauri, man. Like, we need a Bechdel test for Polish people, right? Like, if a joke doesn't have at least two Polish people talking about something besides a non-Polish person, it doesn't pass the...
Talking about something besides kielbasa or pierogies.
Kielbasi test.
Yeah. That's the first thing I'm going to do when I'm back in the theater. I'm going to poke people and be like, do you guys know if this passes the Polish Bechdel test? I can't watch it if it doesn't pass the Polish Bechdel test. You know, please, can someone tell me? I want to watch this Mission Impossible movie. Is Tom Cruise Polish?
You know, I think the Bechdel test is actually very problematic. Because, you know, like sometimes women just do want to talk to other women about guys, you know?
Yeah, and they're not allowed.
Yeah, well, I mean, the feminists want to take away their free speech to do so. So
yeah, I was listening to the most recent fucking Y Theory, and they were talking with Mari Rudy and asking her about, like, do you teach the psychoanalytic... I forget who wrote it, but like the essay about the male gaze, and they had like this 45-minute conversation about like why that's necessary to teach. And like, yes, it gets people thinking about the way that like women are exploited in Hollywood, but it also at the same time has this problem where it closes off the conversation and makes it just like this one-dimensional power play where it's like, oh, I can just like not watch these movies and it will make a difference. And it's like, mm-hmm. No, that's fucking ridiculous. Like, you need to read literally any other theorist in, you know, as a companion to this essay.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the Bechdel test is funny because it's just like from a comic where I think the character is like supposed to be like an over-the-top like radical like lesbian who doesn't watch movies if women don't talk to other women or whatever. It's like, it wasn't meant to be some rule that you followed of like how to watch movies, which I don't think many people actually like follow. They're just like, does this pass?
I feel like there is a certain extent to which people, like, somebody made a whole website out of it, you know.
Sure.
Like, does this movie pass the Bechdel test?
My God.
And I feel like there's people who, like, in Hollywood who like take it seriously, you
God,
know?
I never
like,
thought of that. Do you think there's producer meetings where they're like, does this pass the Bechdel
test? Well,
I'm sure there are. I mean, here's my question, though, is ever since that guy did that, like, rating of, I think it was Nick Cage movies based on the amount of public infrastructure he uses, now I want to know if there are studio execs like, we need to make sure this happens on a public train.
There's that,
you know,
film
what I mean?
Wiki that's like the equivalent of IMDb, but it just talks about trains and movies. Like, it's about one thing and one thing only, and is there a train in the movie? Do the main character, like, there's all sorts of stats. Does the movie like show the full train, or is it just like a set piece? Do they use the train? And like, is it a realistic portrayal? is the portrayal of the train problematic and stuff like that? See, that's you know, but the movie shit is like, people don't understand that, like, movies portray bad people.
Yeah, sometimes you're going to have a bad train.
Yeah. It's like, just because a movie portrays a person who is bad and does bad things doesn't mean the movie is, like, endorsing those views.
I mean, you say that, Todd, but Joker did a mass shooting to my mom. Specifically, it was terrible.
Doing the fucking meme where it's like, when you're a child, you look up to these, but it's all like little baby train, like Thomas the Tank Engine and shit. When you're an adult, you look up to these, and it's like Jokerified train.
It's like Snap Racer.
Fight Club train. And like
Fight Club train. The first rule of Fight Club train is you have to fight on Fight Club.
Thomas the Tank Engine Fight Club, where the trains just ram into each other on a single track.
So Topham Hatt was horrified at the train crash, but Thomas loved it.
I bet that would have been a lot more fun for George Carlin on set, at least. You know what I'm talking about? Like,
yeah.
He would have had way more fun.
There's also, does the dog die in this movie?
Oh, that's
another single-use website. Mm-hmm. It's weird how there are still single-use websites like that, but like it's weird that it's not a Twitter account.
Yeah,
well, the CDC actually recommends that you use a reusable website and a single-use website to prevent the spread of the virus.
That's crazy. I'm not going to do that.
Just everything is on the you know, multi-use website. Like, the Twitter has screenshots of the single-use website, and then I got to get them there.
That's true.
I know.
Putting double masking before I go on a website in order to stop the spread.
Well, I mean, you almost have to at this point, because people are like, are you on TikTok? And I'm like, no. And then I think about what Twitter looks like now, and I'm like, yeah, I guess I am on TikTok, basically.
Yeah. It's free videos to post on your Twitter account and no one can stop you.
Why would that's so wild. Easy. It's like, there's enough people who aren't on TikTok but are on Twitter that you can just steal content and nobody will call you out on it.
It will work on me every single time, without a doubt. I'll just be like, oh, I guess this account made this.
but some Twitter accounts will actually go out of their way to find like really obscure TikToks that have like that have been seen by like no one, but they're like insane shit.
Yeah, there's
that's
great
my
shit
favorite
on
stuff.
Yeah, like Republican Fortnite TikTokers posting their L's. My favorite Twitter account.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to Beep Beep Lettuce. This is episode 130.
This is Beep Beep Lettuce posting their L's.
Yeah, we're always posting.
We're going all the
L's
way back to the beginning.
Which people have completely lost sight of what that means.
I feel like it was misguided from the beginning, because wasn't the first one women posting their L's? And a lot of them were just like, isn't it funny how much I hate women?
I like the journalists posting their L's, because like journalists journalists will just write an article basically being like, why my husband left me and why that's a good thing, actually.
Yeah,
that's true.
Mine their personal misery for clicks.
Well, that's the thing. Journalists actually do have L's.
Well, isn't that supposed to be stand-up comedy?
Yeah.
Aren't you supposed to like do that in front of a brick wall?
But that's the thing. Journalists do post L's. Just saying like something bad happened to me isn't an L. It's like if you tried to accomplish something and then you failed, that's what the loss is. It's not just something bad happening. That's my like pedantic problem with it, is that you know,
journalists
is funny because like we've read that story about like that woman who is like, I keep my husband on a tight chain and he can't text people from Las Vegas or whatever.
That's like
he can't text this robot.
Yeah, he can't have Alexa.
The last day before I took a bunch of days off from work, I found $50 on the ground and I posted it to Twitter and everybody was like, win. And I was thinking like, I didn't win. I just found this $50. If I had counterfeited $50 successfully, that would be a win.
Yeah.
If you'd sold oregano to a dumb child for $50, absolute win.
Unequivocal win. Everyone wins.
Yeah.
It's the euphemism treadmill of L's and dubs, basically. Like, as time has gone on and like L posting and dub posting has like evolved and changed.
That's right. Just like based and cringe. It just means good and bad now.
Yeah. Well, no, I think it more means like good or bad fortune. It's literally just, riddle me this. Have you experienced some good fortune today? Well, that means, my good man, you've posted a dub.
A dub you have.
Riddle me this, fat man, when your parents died, was that not an L?
Hey, shut up, Riddler. It wasn't an L. It was not an L. I didn't take an L.
Well, speaking of posting a dub, there is a new pasta shape.
Oh yeah,
new pasta just dropped.
New pasta just dropped.
This is some like fourth dimensional hyper pasta.
I like this pasta because it looks like something H.R. Giger would design.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I like that it's smooth on one side and looks like a horrible like alien set piece on the other side. Yeah, like, that's really. Yeah, yeah. They were like, how can we make a really uncanny pasta?
This pasta is 100 Gex Rick Owens collab.
Yeah. It looks like that.
Yeah, it kind of looks like the cover of an old Sophie EP, Bip. It's like called a wavy shape.
Yeah, oh yeah, for sure. It's called Cascatelli, and it's Italian for tiny waterfalls, and it's shaped like a candy cane or just like a regular cane. And then it's like smooth on one side of it and then ridged on the other side of it.
It looks like a sea creature from the Cambrian explosion.
I'm sorry, was this created by a non-Italian? This says it was created by a man named Dan Pashman. That doesn't sound Italian to me.
Yeah, I don't know what that sounds
like. If we're canceling white people for opening like a taco truck, I think we also need to cancel Dan Pashman for appropriating Italian culture.
I'm pre-canceling him.
I'm on board. Right. Yeah, this is a horrible affront. Well, okay, he has dark hair. Maybe we don't know. Let's do some phrenology on this guy.
my that's why my diet is nothing but like toast with mayonnaise on it. That is the only thing I eat, because then I cannot possibly offend anybody.
I'm offended. Yeah.
You're gonna offend your cardiologist.
I'm currently searching his Twitter history for use of the word WOP pre Megan Thee Stallion.
Isn't it spelled WOP, not WAP though?
Whoa, just Italian spelling word. It out doesn't make it okay to say.
Yeah, well, hey.
I'm sorry. Please beep that. Guys, please forgive me, our Italian American listeners.
So wait, every time you like something good happens to you and somebody just posts the letter W in response to that, what they're really doing is they're trying to start one of those like chains where racist people will start with just start with one letter and then
Yeah. That's very rude of them.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that.
Everyone posting their W's has to stop.
That's right. Post an L instead.
Yeah, I'm definitely down to try the spaghetti because I like different kinds of pasta.
Well, okay, wait, did they give it a name? Like there's rotelli, rigatoni. Like what's the name here?
It's Cascatelli? Cascatelli.
Little waterfalls, apparently.
Because it looks like a little waterfall.
Mm-hmm. Do we need another pasta shape? Is this really necessary? This is bourgeois. This is bourgeois decadence.
It's modeled after the Cascade badge from the second generation of Pokemon games.
It does look like a Pokemon badge.
All right, I'm on board.
Yeah. Oh, man, that'd actually be kind of a fun gym if like there were little slide puzzles, because this looks like a slide at a playground, and it would be like you'd slide down a level and then like fight some Italian-themed trainers.
Yeah, welcome to the pasta gym. I am gym leader Bruno. No, rigatoni, I choose you.
It's all just a little pasta Pokemon.
I think there is a guy named Bruno in the Elite Four in the first game. Is he supposed to be Italian? He's very buff. I don't know what race he's supposed to be.
I don't know. I think the only three pasta shapes that there should be ziti, shells, and rigatoni. Anything else is just, I mean, and angel hair, what the fuck is that? All right, put some effort in. Come on.
Rugrats. Disgusting. Rugrats shapes.
Oh, yeah, rugrats. Ravioli.
Wait, what's rigatoni? You gotta have rugrats.
Little Sonic, the hedgehog heads.
Is rigatoni the bow ties?
No. Rigatoni is just also ziti, apparently.
It's like ziti, but not, it's like the flat ends and I think no ridges. Because there's also, I forget what it's called, but there's one that's like rigatoni, but it has ridges in it. Oh, wait, no, it does have ridges.
What are the little bow ties? I like
rotelli because I like my pasta to look like a fucking Discworld. That's, if it doesn't look like a science fiction novel, I'm not eating it.
Bow ties are for folly.
Farfalle.
There's already
farfalle.
So many great DiGiorno. Pasta's, why do we need another one?
He was trying to perfect the craft. Get it to do all the stuff he wanted pasta to do, I guess.
It's like Apple trying to come up with a new fucking plug.
Yeah.
Something about adhering the most sauce. That's why he has like the ridges and like the curve. And,
you know, the crazy thing about this pasta is that it's also an NFT.
Oh,
that's what.
People made this pasta. It cost $1 million for one piece.
It's not really, but it's... I think NFTs are very funny.
It's hilarious because people are just like pretending that it's cool. I feel like there's rich people. I feel like it's mostly Bitcoin
it's
people.
It's a tax
who are
haven,
like,
right? It's a way to absolutely. Just sink money into something or launder money. People in the Discord were like, can't wait to hear Todd's take on NFTs. It's like, what did you expect me to say? They're fucking stupid. what else can like, I fucking say? All right, it's rich people throwing money around stupidly because they can, and then laughing in your face when you think like, oh, money is actually real. It's like, no, it's fucking not. It's just it's a fucking number on a ledger. All the NFTs should make you realize is that Ted was right. Okay,
we need to reback NFTs with the gold standard. That will fix.
There
everything.
You go. Now yeah. that's
every NFT has to be backed up by a physical piece of gold or a physical piece of win or cringe, depending on how cool the art is. That's all I want.
That's the thing about artists, though. Like, is it's the same story as like rich aristocratic benefactors from the 14th century. Like, they're just figuring out a way to like prove their wealth to one another. And all these wide-eyed artists are like, "Holy shit! Look at all of the money moving around. Like, can I turn this Matt Bors comic into an NFT and please just give me a one-time payment of $1.5 million?" Like,
that's the thing with the NFTs, right? Like, I don't understand why somebody couldn't just take something that's already in an NFT and make a new NFT of it, like change something slight, just take your homework, change a little bit so the teacher doesn't know, and then like re-upload it to the blockchain as a new NFT. Like,
you can't.
What's preventing anybody from doing that?
So we're gonna welcome to the. This is now an NFT incubation podcast. Oh, we're going to teach you how to breed NFTs one from another and selectively engineer them to be the ultimate life form.
It's not that hard. It's basically the thing I found is that it's all an NFT is the code, right? It's tied to the JPEG or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But it's like a special code that says like this is an authentic one. So you can basically sell just like prints of art. Like, in that way where it's like this one is one of the real ones. Mm-hmm.
So if I found an NFT on the ground, that wouldn't be a win, but if I successfully counterfeited an NFT, that's what we're talking about.
There you go.
So what we're basically saying is the reason that NFTs exist at all is because human brains are fucking like soft and stupid and don't mm-hmm. and yeah. irrational. It's like mm-hmm. because right. it like okay, yeah, if you have an original like Mona Lisa or whatever, original Da Vinci, like cool, whatever. But like when you're 10 feet away, you can't fucking tell the difference. All right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. So just steal a fake one.
That's
it's
right.
The same. It's worth the same amount of money.
Who the fuck cares?
I mean, it literally is. That's my thing is like, okay, like maybe if you're really into the like I understand historical preservation and stuff, but like this shit is all just fucking fake. It's the fakest parts of finance, technology, and the art world. Three of the most notoriously fake industries and just like all rolled up into like one fucking like Mighty Morphin Power Rangers robot, like a fucking fake Gundam. Like it's the
it's
worst shit
funny.
Possible.
Yeah, yeah. Because I feel like the top of the chain is just people who have a lot of money in Bitcoin or Ethereum or whatever, and it's like they want to keep the gravy train rolling. And so the more that they get normal people interested in Bitcoin and the blockchain, the more valuable
pyramid
their holdings
scheme.
Becomes. That they're like, pyramid oh, you can buy art with it. You can support artists, and then you know you get chumps who were like, ooh, they gain value. Maybe I'll buy an NFT, and then I'll become rich too. And then most of them are going to just lose all their money.
Yeah.
And flow straight to the top.
I bought this NFT and it was just instructions how to sell Cutco knives. I'm not sure what's going on.
Well, that would be more useful than most of the things that are being sold via NFT. I mean, like me personally, I assign things value based on their utilitarian value to me. Like, what can I get out of it? Like, I don't know.
I think most people do. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like a fucking, I don't know, an axe, a tool, a wrench. Like that's infinitely more valuable to me than a print of some stupid piece of artwork. Yeah. Not that I think
a yard of linen
has no place in society, but like
a penis pump.
There's no difference to me putting a fuck. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Average yard of linen fan.
There's no difference
average
to
coat
me.
Enjoyer.
I'll put a fucking print of a piece of artwork on my wall and the original artwork on my wall, and it's literally the exact same experience. I don't get any gratification from knowing that. Like there's an expensive piece of paper on my wall, but I do get gratification from knowing that I have a expensive and very capable tool because it has a high utilitarian value.
Well, it's just like a fucking, it's like you don't want to get like old person brain where you're like, I have to keep plastic wrap over this like seat cushion on an uncomfortable wooden chair because Abraham Lincoln farted on it once 200 years ago. Like,
yeah.
Abraham Lincoln scat porn.
Yeah,
that's a new genre.
Todd's always watching that. Yeah.
See,
I swear I meant to type in hat porn. I swear.
It's so close.
Speaking of something that is equally as authentic and equally as, you know, real and not just something that was made up. Apparently, there are two Fed-backed protests clashing.
Right.
Do you want to tell us, like, what's going on here?
Okay, I have a lot of thoughts about this. There has been a... there has been a movement all of the sudden where everyone has decided that there has been widespread quote unquote Asian hate, and that this is a huge problem, and every single media outlet has decided that, even though they didn't report on it for the past year and a half, you know, every once in a while, an article here where, like, maybe a couple Asians had hate crimes against them or whatever. But, like, apparently it's a wildfire. And now, within the past week or so, anti-Asian hate is one of those things where all of a sudden everyone has to change their profile picture to anti-Asian hate.
It's so weird because, like, it's almost like in the past, you know, couple decades, like, Asians, in the same way, like, I don't know, Irish and Italian people are being granted, like, the WASP Anglo whiteness status, like, socioeconomically in the United States. But if you were in their shoes, I mean, like, I would still want to be able to keep my, like, you know, POC hierarchy position, you know, while still having the economic privilege of being finally granted, you know, economic whiteness in the United States. So it makes a lot of sense, right?
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because, you know, it's so hard to talk about because it's like, it's fairly racist just to, like, talk about Asian people as a whole, I feel like.
Sure.
Because it's there's exactly totally different diaspora and immigrant cultures that are in different places all around America that have wildly varying class positions. Because there's tons of people from that region of the world. Many of them come over here because they're rich and they want to be doctors, they want to be lawyers, they want to be, you know, they have, like, big amounts of capital that they are able to throw around. So you have this whole cohort of people who fall into the group of Asian who are, you know, basically at the tops of society, and are able to sort of, like, totally get by without even experiencing any real negativity. And then, you know, most of them are in media jobs and in you know, medical jobs,
PMC jobs.
Sure. Right? Yeah. And then you have a whole other cohort of people who also fall into Asian category who are, you know, sex trafficked, who work in very menial jobs, who are very experiencing a lot of poverty, especially in bigger, like, especially within New York City. Like, there's a whole, you know, American, Chinese American community who are here that are, like, very poor. They work in restaurants and nail salons and massage parlors and things like
this. Those people who just, like, collect bottles all day.
So, yeah. Wait a second. Bryn, are you saying that, like, class and economic status is a better predictor of whether somebody is, like, a better way to quantify whether somebody is oppressed than, you know, like, an arbitrary thing based on
if you're
where
from
they
an
come
entire
from?
Continent? Yeah.
Instead of doing race science, maybe we should just look at who has economic privilege and who doesn't, like, on an individual case by case basis, because that's extremely problematic.
My big problem with this whole thing is that, like, this sprouted up around the same time that all of your liberal media outlets that are promoting this, like, stop anti-Asian hate or whatever, is they're the same ones who have just been provoking us about China over and over and over again, running all of these articles about, like, what is China overtaking us? What would happen in a, literally printing articles, like, what would happen in a conflict between the US and China? Just doing, like, war predictions. And then they're like, where did all this anti-Chinese and anti-Asian sentiment come from? It's like, you fucking manufactured it. They did the same thing with Middle Eastern people during the Iraq War. The like liberal Democrat news outlets were constantly talking about, like, cultural differences and how that could affect during wartime and this and that. And then they're like, why did we let Bush lead us into this harebrained war scheme? It's like, you fucking facilitated people. It, you idiots.
Right.
They're not even idiots. They do it on purpose and they do it well. Yeah.
Right. I mean, this is a Fed plan, and they've done it before. This is going to be the same thing with Muslims. I mean, and it's all like sort of taking from itself, right? Like the whole thing about Muslims is like, now you feel guilty for the past 20 years of like anti-Muslim rhetoric. And now that Uyghurs are Muslims, we're like, oh, we're saving them. It's like, America doesn't give a shit about Muslims. What are you talking about?
I don't think people like Ross do that. And David Brooks, like they don't give a shit. These people that like were writing, basically making the like liberal case for war in Afghanistan and Iraq, and then, you know, a few short years later being like, maybe we should have we lost sight of our Judeo-Christian values and our totally valid and worthwhile persecution of Muslims. It's like they don't give a they're not, it's just exertion of power. Like they're not guilty, they're just, they want you to have this like conflicting narrative, these conflicting narratives in your head, because that's their whole point. Their whole point is to fill your brain with trash.
Well, and they're trying to distract you also from like all the fucking atrocities the Biden administration is committing, right? Absolutely. They're like, this seems like an easy, relatively easy project that we can work on, that's, you know, that we can get a bunch of people to care about on social media. And it's like, I feel it. There is anti-Asian discrimination and hate in this country, and it's a problem. Mm-hmm. But the people who, like, we're not going to fix that by like doing the things the Washington Post has been writing op-eds about, because the Washington Post is one of the sources of that fucking bias, that racism. Like, it's so fucking obvious, and it's just like they want you to be in this position where you are all rage and no potency. You have no actual mechanism of action, because a mechanism of action to remove the problems that they want you to be mad about would involve removing them. Like it's a closed circuit of logic. They want to stay inside.
And so the thing about this particularly is that, you know, and we talked about on the bonus episode that, you know, the very random, strange, pretty unrelated, you know, obviously, you know, I agree with John, like America's media has been saber-rattling against China, like raising the tension on
and North Korea,
North Korea, and looking like at it
forever
is a huge contributor. Yeah,
and Vietnam, but a little to a certain extent, and even South Korea has been like a little bit shaky with us because of their relationship.
Yeah, anyway. Because the media wants you to take a side in the BTS versus
Twice,
whatever the other. whatever the other bands are.
But and then the other thing is that even the Asian countries that we don't portray negatively outright, even like the ones that are friendly with us, we're like, oh, they're inscrutable. What's going on in Japan? The wildest shit you've ever dreamed of. And it's like, no, they're a fucking society. Like, they have reasons that they do things. They're not this like weird esoteric monolith. It's like the old stereotypes about East Asia are just... They didn't go away. They just became matter of fact. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, absolutely. Especially after we colonized them.
Yeah, and you mentioned Japan, John. Like, you wonder why you don't see any negativity about Japan. Like, the only thing you see in the media is Japan's falling birth rates. Why Japan wants people to immigrate. Like, stuff like that's because Japan hit the industrial wall. Like, Japan is on the decline. They're declining.
Yeah.
And if you go back, you know, to the 80s, 70s, most of our listeners, we weren't alive to experience this, but historically you can go back and see it, because it did happen. Japan experienced this incredible like industrial boom, and they became a real competitor to American industry, especially electronics, cars and stuff. And they were, it like back then there was really strong anti-Japanese racism going on. There were fucking hate crimes against Japanese people by people who were like, I got laid off from the auto plant in the Midwest because the Japanese people fucking, they're making tiny cars that
damn
go.
Damn Toyota.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And like nowadays, because Japan hit the industrial wall, they're not a threat. So you don't see that kind of sentiment. You see that kind of sentiment against China, because China, they haven't and they may not, at least in the foreseeable future, hit that same industrial wall, because they're not constrained in the same way that Japan is resource-wise and land-wise, and there are a whole bunch of different factors there too.
Yeah, well, China has a higher like industrial ceiling because they just have like a different mode of organization. Japan was operating under the imperial auspices of the United States, and like capitalism has a very low industrial ceiling. It was the first system to develop that industrial ceiling, but like there are so many better options at this point.
What's happening now is that we have all of this sort of saber rattling with China, but also conflicting in people's minds with this sort of new like anti-Asian American hate medium that's being pushed through the media. So you have this Stop Asian Hate movement. That I don't, you know, if there's a huge rise in Asian American hate crimes, like obviously we don't love that. That's bad.
Mm-hmm. But saying stop is like
what does it mean?
Meaningless. Because at least like when you have protests against the police, you had people saying defund the police.
It might just be that there's a big rise in like people feeling a strong way about like Asian culture. I mean, like look at the explosion of like weeb culture and like K-pop culture in the past year. Maybe the Asian hate is just people that are sick of you know, the way that the weebs put you know, that shit on a pedestal.
Yeah.
Well, it's also like we in the United States, we don't have access to quote unquote Asian culture. Like we just don't. We have like we have this very narrow thing from Japan that is tailored to us both by the Japanese and the American side, and then the same thing happening in South Korea, and that's like it. That's like 98% of the Asian culture that you get in the United States. So people, Americans especially, really don't know anything about Asia by and large. It's like the Middle East or Africa. Like point to Laos on a map. You can't, right. Like, mm-hmm. You know.
And so you have, so now you have this sort of pro-East Turkestan bullshit where people are being like, I mean, if you look at this is absolutely.
Who's saying that?
Oh, well, the people.
The CIA.
The CIA. Yes.
Well, anyway, that's what this boils down to. This, the Asian, anti-Asian hate versus the pro-Uyghur, like, anti, like. It is basically just two segments of feds.
Yeah, basically.
Astroturfing a protest. And it is kind of funny to see them clash in this way. Not saying everybody who like gets taken in by these astroturf social movements is a fed, but the narratives are pushed by feds and they trickle down to the media class who sees that it's profitable to perpetuate those narratives. And that's how that shit spreads.
Yeah, and a lot of it is also a deliberate cover for the fact that Joe Biden is not only not lowering funding for, but expanding funding for Border Patrol, ICE, and police departments across the entire country, mm-hmm, which is right. A form of terrorism and racist violence against Black and brown people that is, you know, like probably the biggest problem in the United States right now, and nobody wants you to talk about it now that Orange Man gone.
But John, he lowered the flags to half mast in honor of the victims of this crime. So he is a perfect, he says stop Asian hate.
But what's really fucked up about this is now you have two sides of the same argument that disagree with each other, but both agree on China bad. Right. You know what I'm saying?
Like, that's why they're feds.
Yeah. So
that's
it's
the
like,
whole point.
The whole point is like both of them totally consent to going to a hot war with China and like moving in on the borders and claiming like a whole big chunk of the east
or
eastern border of China for what is basically Israel. Like, you know, like Turkey
or sanctions though. Like I see a lot the like Uyghur protesters. They're like, we can stop this thing that is like we don't know is actually happening by doing something that is really just for the benefit of the state apparatus and their like state capitalist allies, right?
Yeah, and the intelligence community. Mm-hmm.
We can make this genocide real if we stop them from buying enough food that Uyghurs start to starve, and then suddenly they are doing a genocide, and then that's terrible. We can invade
them. Well, and that's
the
other funny thing is like it's so fucking short-sighted because they want us to think that we have a chance against China economically, which we don't.
Yeah.
Do not.
No
but,
way.
Or that like sanctions against them would somehow hurt them more than us, which they wouldn't. But then also what it really does is it forces global geopolitics to rearrange themselves. They don't want there to be a fucking iron curtain. They don't want there to be physical walls, but they do want the trade agreements to recrystallize into two opposing factions because the U.S. still thinks that maybe if we pool all our buddies together, we can reestablish world dominance. That's literally what all of this is about.
Right, which is not
China's
true.
A threat to that.
It's well, not going to work.
No, it won't work.
Well, not to spend the whole episode talking about this. Something else we wanted to talk about was apparently young bankers... not a new hip hop group, but actually young bankers working at Goldman Sachs are saying they might quit unless their grueling working conditions improve. So I have to say, labor relations, unionization, it starts with bankers making
with the investment bankers.
Seven fucking figures.
Mm-hmm. They should own their means of production and make nine figures.
I hate to be somebody who's like, these workers should have known what they were getting into when they started working for Goldman Sachs, because I do want to be in their corner, but it kind of reminds me of when that article came out where it was like, alt-right women are mad, the alt-right men are not treating them well. And I'm like, I don't really know how to help you. Like,
I kind of don't think that they're workers. Like,
no, sure, they're members. They're highest cops, echelon basically. Of the PMC.
Right? They're cops, basically.
Yeah, they're finance cops.
Yeah, they're
sure.
they're capital cops.
Exactly.
And it's like, you know, if your job like shouldn't exist, I don't know if I think you're a worker. And like, you know, your job is fake. It's not even really doing anything. It's mm-hmm. just moving money around and like sucking it up out of the economy and just putting mm-hmm. it into like a tiny pocket where you get to have it all.
Mm-hmm. Right. Like, is selling an NFT labor? I don't know. I don't think so.
they're like, hey, we're working 95 hours a week being finance cops for these fucking finance bros in suits two office floors above us. Can we get that lowered to 80? And all the communists are like, how about we just give everyone food and housing and you don't have to fucking work at all? Yeah. How's that mm-hmm. sound?
How about we burn your whole building down? Shut up.
Let's get you on unemployment, buddy. Let's get you on disability.
Let's get you some re-education. You probably need to unlearn a lot of things.
These are complex issues, and I think we need to solve them by forming a DSA Goldman Sachs global finance caucus.
Yeah, we need to align with the real workers. Yeah, any organization you're in needs to back up these Goldman Sachs workers.
One thing, not to bring it back to China, but another thing that happened was the NCSC posted this week, your DNA is the most valuable thing you own, because you own nothing.
This is crazy.
You will be happy. But no,
that's not the most valuable thing I own. I own a Game Boy Color still. That's more valuable.
So, but then it goes into learn how the People's Republic of China is collecting and using data about your DNA. There's so many things wrong with this post, but it comes basically within a day or two of a story about Amazon coming out saying that Amazon is now going to be collecting its driver's DNA. And if you don't consent to that, you get fired. And it's like, wait a second. Which one of those is a bigger threat? The guys that can fire you if you don't give them your biometrics, or a country on the other side of the world?
Yeah, it's crazy because this PDF is absolutely nuts. Like the first sentence, because they link it's from the director of nationalintelligence.gov.
Yeah. Doesn't seem very intelligent.
The NCCS is actually the National Center for State Courts. So I don't know why they're tweeting about this, but this is just literally this, you know,
they're just another arm of the counterintelligence apparatus.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And they say, would you want your DNA or other healthcare data going to an authoritarian regime?
You mean another one?
With a record of exploiting DNA for repression and surveillance?
Well, wait a minute. Are we talking about the entire history of the United States?
Yeah. Is this a trick question?
The country that invented eugenics? Like, I'm having trouble figuring out who you're talking about.
Do you mean the United States?
Yes. No. They mean China. And so what they're really talking about is like healthcare data, basically just to like give, like, China wants healthcare data so it can like continually study the diseases and like pandemic and stuff, but they're like scaremongering about this to protect your precious bodily fluids. Mm-hmm. It's fucking insane.
Yeah.
Just the US, like the CIA doing the Every Sperm is Sacred song to protest against China.
Like, China China is a state apparatus, and like, you know, they could use your DNA for evil, but it's like, the United States is already doing this, and the whole point of this is to convince you that it's like China is your is what you really have to worry about. It's like the United States government has already kicked you in the nuts, and they're telling you, wait, aren't you worried that China might kick you in the nuts?
Yeah, someone a thousand check out those miles shoes. Away.
Yeah. Those would really hurt if they kicked you, and China's like, we're exactly. not trying to kick you. It's fine.
While yeah. companies, basically, you know, an arm of the state, are literally doing what they're accusing China of doing.
Right. This post you found, you have to sign a document releasing your biometric data and use insane. Of AI cameras to work at Amazon. And if you don't sign that, if you don't like click the little like I agree, you don't get to work there anymore.
Yeah.
So it's just like I don't even understand. I guess maybe this is mostly talking about fingerprints, biometric data, but I mean, it's not clear that they could make it mean anything.
Right. They just need to make, like, you know, economically feasible, like, full body bio suits that can monitor every output of your body. And then they're going to start putting drivers in those.
It's definitely yeah. to categorize workers by who is, like, a more, like, they're going to try and algorithmically decide who is best for what job or who should be promoted or demoted based on, like, personality or physical traits and stuff like that. I mean, they are doing... Amazon is doing eugenics on their workforce. It rules. It's everything is going to shit. Yeah. This is going to be the world that we're going to be living in. Like this, it's just going to be more and more of this shit. It's all fucking awesome. This fucking rules.
Yeah, I mean, the more that they systematize it, that's the problem. Is like, and it's all of these little subsystems where they're just like, let's find out who has the best fucking genetic code to drive a truck or a forklift, or let's figure out who has the disposition to sit on the fucking phone all day. It's like nobody has the fucking disposition to sit on the goddamn phone all day. You can't just like. Breed us like dogs. Like this one's gonna catch rats and this one's gonna chase geese. Like what the fuck are you doing? We're like you have to treat people like human beings. And the system the level of inhumanity that's just baked into the system at this point is like this is what the accelerationists are talking about, right? It's like the machinic progress of technology, and the machinic progress of technology involves a lot of like racism and like weird micro eugenics and like all kinds of like it people say it's Huxleyan, but it's really more like we're Philip K. Dicked, you know what I mean?
The American people are getting
deep inside our ass.
Philip K. Dicked down.
Philip K. Deep Dicked.
Yeah, it's terrible. There's fucking brain implants all deep up in our assholes.
Amazon being able to do this is, I think, very concretely a sign that they are the state. Like, if America was doing this, like if you couldn't work for the state and if you couldn't get a job without, you know, creating or allowing them to, you know, have your biometric data and like be constantly on film or
if
whatever.
You couldn't vote unless you like gave your biometric data.
People would rightly call this like, you know, a fascist dictatorship or whatever. But because it's just a private company, that's somehow okay. And I think that the thing about... One thing I found out recently, I didn't really know this, but the word privatization was invented like by Nazi Germany, like technically The Economist invented the word to describe like what Germany was doing at the time.
Awesome.
And it's just like, we currently just like, that's our stasis. Like that's what we do. America is just like the privatization country. And it's like, that's what fascism is.
Right.
Oh yeah.
And just because it's Amazon doesn't mean it's not horrifically a fascist.
It really is a better indicator that it's horrifically fascist.
Right, exactly.
Like, I mean, state control of industry isn't necessarily bad. There are plenty of forms of that that are perfectly functional and good, but it's like when you allow the capitalists and not like, you know, there are different ways to categorize it, but the workers, or at least like competent administrators, you know, at least competent administrators,
or administrators that are beholden to the workers.
Sure. Yeah.
Bryn, you said something that I really want to hammer home, which is that it's like this privatization treadmill. Like, and I think it's not necessarily just linear. I think it's cyclical because like the state did pioneer this, like, you know, you go back to like Tuskegee experiments, the fact that you can't get a state job without getting fingerprinted and shit like that. that. And like now the torch has been passed to these private companies. Like Amazon is now expanding this to an insane degree, but they're also like, you have to look at the bigger picture, which is that Amazon is doing this to pioneer doing this so that the state can then do it later on.
Speaking of fascism and having public and private infrastructure all rolled up into one under the capitalists, there was an Arizona man who seemed to have a plan to do something about it, a really bad plan, and it's hard to tell what his motivation was. But he seems to have, in Texas, I believe, driven off the road several armed, you know, groups of National Guardsmen who were transporting COVID-19 vaccines. And also, he looks kind of like a cut-rate Saddam Hussein, which is pretty cool.
He does look like Saddam Hussein. And he basically... You have to hand it to him. And once the van stopped, he pointed a gun at one unarmed guardsman and demanded to search all the vehicles, insisting that he was a detective. It's unclear what he...
I mean, he's probably just some, like, fucking crazy anti-vaxxer. He's from the Southwest. It breeds a lot of, like, weird mysticism and weird opinions about medicine and science. But... even if he was like the exact wrong kind of guy to do this, it is always funny when National Guardsmen get fucked.
That's true. That is good.
You know? Yeah, maybe he was looking for the microchips in the vaccine or something.
Yeah, I'm trying to find out what's going on here.
For the baby foreskins that they
it's
use.
It's got to be black oil.
And I guess the local cops came and carted him away, and nobody got hurt. It ended up being a totally nonviolent interaction. Which honestly is the only problem with this. He probably should have taken some of those guardsmen hostage if he really wanted to do his plan. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. I want to know what his plan was. That's what I'm saying.
Give this guy a speaking tour, and I don't want to hear from the White House. The vaccine rollout? Fuck that. I want to hear from crazy gun guy.
Like, that's why these stories always end up being the ones that you hear about. It's because like this is a wacky, crazy guy who did something insane. And like it contributes to the narrative that anybody skeptical of vaccines is like a crank, right? Because that's on purpose, right? Because vaccines, though, like the actual vaccine, at least historically, like they work, right? The vaccines don't cause autism. Vaccines are not like but they're not microchipping you. They're used by rich people to get access to developing economies. That's the real conspiracy behind vaccines. But they push a conspiracy that, no, it's actually cranks that think vaccines are them trying to mind control you, because that's easy to market to libs that are like, don't you trust science? It's like, yeah, but I don't trust rich people.
Right, exactly. Don't look into any other actual bad things that are happening with the rollout of vaccines or whatever.
Right. I trust the science behind vaccines. I just don't trust the economics. You know what I mean? Like that's the main thing.
That's right.
Right.
Now there's even doubts about like the actual vaccine. Like a U.S. health agency is now saying AstraZeneca falsified some of its vaccine trial data.
Market Watch is reporting that the U.S. health agency says AstraZeneca may have included outdated information when it released COVID-19 vaccine trial data.
Oh, no. What does that mean?
Wait, how do you have outdated information on a novel coronavirus that just popped up last year?
No, it was just a little mistake. They just screwed up a little bit. Look, cut some slack, all right?
In a rare statement, the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease said it had been notified by the Data and Safety Monitoring Board, an independent committee overseeing U.S. trials. We love independent committees, folks.
We love them.
That was concerned by information released by AstraZeneca on the initial data from its COVID-19 vaccine clinical trial. But it doesn't really... What happened? what was the bad data?
Pre-specified interim analysis with a data cutoff of February 17th. So...
Oh,
it also doesn't say what year that is. I mean, I imagine that has to be 2021. Mm-hmm. I don't really understand how you can have old information on the coronavirus.
You just did this.
Yeah,
made this vaccine.
This just happened.
Maybe a month or two later, they did a larger study with a larger sample size, but the results were more questionable. So they went with the old results because they wanted to rush a vaccine to market or whatever. Like, I mean, that, that is probably what happened. And now they're blaming it on incompetence, but it's really just a cost-benefit analysis. It's like, well, we can make a ton of money if we just falsify this data and then blame it later on incompetence. It's, you know, it's, it's all, it's all, you know, angle shooting in the name of profit.
Yeah, and, and they've got us fucking arguing about it because now it's like, well, what should AstraZeneca be doing about their trial system in this and that development of the vaccine? It's like, none of this should have been the conversation. As soon as this was a problem, we should have just been like, whoever, like all your research teams are now legally required to work together, and whoever develops it first, it's just available for every pharmaceutical company to print, and the government just pays them and they print it for free and give it out for free. Like that, it's the Medicare for all thing. It's like, we're arguing about like what clauses and statutes in the Affordable Care Act should be like changed or repealed. It's like, no, just give us fucking healthcare.
And evil Dr. Fauci says it was an unforced error. This was likely a really good rat vaccine. And this kind of thing does nothing but cast some doubt about the vaccine and contributes to some hesitancy. When you look at it, the data is good.
Shut the fuck up, you fucking wop.
I don't, I mean, and this is the thing. It's like, this kind of stuff is playing into the people who are like thinking that you're going to get microchipped or it's going to give you some sort of like shaking disease or whatever.
Yeah. Because it's like, it's not going to, it's going to do the opposite of reassure them. If you're like, look, it actually is a good vaccine and this data is, I don't know what he's saying. The data is wrong.
It's good.
Like,
it's fine.
Just tell people what the data might mean. Say that there might be issues because it seems like it's just about the efficacy. It's not like about some hidden danger about it. It's just like how well it works at stopping you from getting COVID.
Yeah. Well, and this is all just bourgeois infighting. Like Todd said, it's literally just angle shooting between different capitalists trying to figure out who's going to get the biggest and best monopoly on this when the dice are finished rolling, you know, when the cards are out on the table. And that's the fucking problem, is that shouldn't be allowed.
Yeah,
you shouldn't be able to fucking do that.
Yeah.
It should just be available and publicly developed. Like,
that's right. And there's all these like vaccines, AstraZeneca, Johnson & Johnson. Look, I'm going to be getting the vaccine from Anheuser-Busch and Philip Morris. All right. That's the real vaccine. You know, they've been developing them a lot longer than any of these pharma companies. That's for sure.
All right. And with that, whatever it was, thank you so much for listening to VP Philetus. This has been a wild episode. Full disclosure, Todd is in the great outdoors, tethering his computer to his phone, and we are watching him have a beautiful morning with some lovely birds. So if you hear any birds chirping,
I'm tethered Kaczynski right now.
Yeah. Tethered Kaczynski.
I turned myself into technology, Morty. I'm tethered Ted.
So if this episode sounds weird at the end, it's because we had some connection issues, but we'll be back.
And if anybody has a cocaine connection in Montana, please hit me up.
Yeah, or an LSD connection in Stanford. Yes. So thanks so much for listening. You can follow us at WeedPod on Twitter. You can follow us all individually from there. Please rate and review us at Apple Podcasts. It really helps people find the show. Check us out on Patreon at patreon.com/beepbeeplettuce. You can get weekly bonus episodes there, where we cover even more news and have even more ridiculous and in-depth conversations. You can hang out with us on our Discord, and you can go to BP Bledis Mids posting on Facebook. Other than that, you can listen to my other show, Generation Loss. You can listen to John's other show, Work Stoppage, and we'll see you in the Discord.
Beep on, y'all.
Keep beeping.
Bye.